Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Dermot Smurfit, the CEO of GAN, formerly Game Account Network, on why every land-based casino should have a social casino connected to it. Dermot Smurfit, the CEO of GAN, formerly Game Account Network, has long experience in iGaming and development in game content. With GAN, he has turned his attention to social casinos and how important they are to player loyalty, connectivity with customers, and the long-term financial health of any land-based casino. He talks about why U.S. casino operators have been slow to embrace social casinos that would allow them to stay in touch with their players when off property. He also explains why Facebook and other platforms aren't the best vehicles to fully utilize the data casinos receive from their social games. He spoke with me at his Las Vegas offices in December. They used to be the clearest blue. Now you don't see so well. Dermot Smurfit, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. Welcome to Las Vegas. It's great to have another great company out here. It's the capital of gaming. Why did you decide to make this move? I think your company has its roots in the UK. So why did you decide to come over here?
Well, the best way to describe Game Account Network, GAN, as we're known, effective from G2E 2015, is that we're an Irish company set up in England that has all of our expansion opportunity here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So we have become a U.S.-facing company, and that's best expressed by my relocation here to Las Vegas, which, as you've touched on already, is the gaming capital of the world.
Mm-hmm. So you can do more business just being here rather than being in London or elsewhere.
I think it demonstrates our commitment to the U.S. market. And I think it's very comforting for executives, casinos, who want to know that they can get their hands around my throat personally.
Exactly. If something goes wrong. Right?
And also it's good for the company that technology and marketing is based in London, but for the company to understand that our future is here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I would almost say that the future has arrived already. Mm-hmm. You can look at some of the corporate customer signings that we've announced throughout the year to date, and you can see that our momentum is already building.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the name change. Game Account Network was a mouthful, just like Global Gaming Business was a mouthful. So I went to GGB, you went to GAN. Why did you make that change?
There seems to be a propensity in America to create acronyms wherever possible. So in working with Aristocrat initially in summer of 2011, we signed a strategic partnership with Aristocrat, and we got to understand the industry over here in the U.S. and how it all functioned behind the scenes. And the good folks at Aristocrat were very quick to create the acronym of GAN. Mm-hmm. And the lovely Scottish lady called Gillian Findlay, who came up with it first, as I recall. So I give her the emotional and intellectual credit for coming up with GAN. And then at that point, so that was late 2011, I decided to try and buy GAN.com, and that was a bit of an epic voyage where bit by bit, every 6 months, you make a slightly better or worse offer, depending on perspective, to buy the URL, and we finally got a deal done in August, September of this year.
Okay, great.
So it took me about 3.5-4 years to buy GAN.com.
Sure. Right, we talked about the beginnings of the company last time we met, but I think it's worth going back to that again because it has an interesting kind of path that you've taken to this point.
Right, so touching on the issue about regulation and gambling. This business was financed in the early years very much with the money from investors who didn't want to take any regulatory compliance risk. So one of the ways we attacked the online games market was by developing skill-based games, games of physical and mental skill, where you would play for real money prizes in competition tournament formats. Mm-hmm. And in 2002, we launched December the 11th, 2002, we launched a website, gameaccount.com, possibly one of the worst consumer names that have ever been invented. But we launched it with one game, a golf game, where up to four people could play for small amounts of money and take turns to swing the golf club and navigate around a 9-hole or an 18-hole golf course. And we all virtually high-fived and thought, what clever chaps we are, until somebody pointed out, so how long does it take to play a round of golf online? And we said, about 2 or 3 hours. And how much do people bet? on average, or about $5 each. So the pool of $20 for a four-player game would generate about $2 in, or 10% commission for 2 hours worth of play, multiplied by the four players. So your cycle rate compared to slots or even table games was insanely slow. So in as the United Kingdom market matured and regulated in 2007, 1st of September 2007, we decided to become a licensed, regulated gaming software developer and provider, and that's when we launched our first casino table games. So we went from being a games company for the first 5 years of our existence, focused on skill games, and then we developed our first casino table games in 2007, because the United Kingdom had regulated to the point where we could comfortably get licensed and enter into the gambling market, because prior to that, getting a gambling license was really a crazy exercise in filling out a form and getting licensed in some offshore jurisdiction, which didn't really give you anything other than lip service to the concept of gaming licensure.
Right, no question. So then you've transitioned into social gaming. Tell us how that transition came about.
Well, there was an interstitial step before we get there. So for the first 5 years of a company's existence, we built this enormous technology system underneath the bonnet. And the games that we developed, the skill-based games, some of them very complex multiplayer games, were simply the visible tip of the iceberg. So that the real clever stuff was taking place underneath the bonnet. This is the technology system for letting people register online, deposit money, store value in an online account, and then high-frequency transaction processing required in order to run a very chatty, transaction-heavy multiplayer gaming system. So in 2007, when we launched our first casino game, it was technically very simple for us to go there because we'd already scaled the Mount Everest of all technical challenges. We'd built a complex multiplayer gaming system that could do poker and backgammon and gin rummy and games of golf and a whole bunch of other things. And then for us to do a simple game of roulette or a simple game of blackjack, it was like it was like the smallest, shallowest foothill in front of the Alps. So we implemented those games. We brought on board a wide range of games, and then we got to 2009, early 2010, and we realized that there was a market opportunity emerging in the United States. And that market opportunity was somebody with a platform, this very complex internet gaming system, and that's what we call it, an internet gaming system. We branded ours GameStack, just for the purposes of corporate branding, which seems to be a requirement here in America, that all the different components of your technology have a brand. So we have GameStack and a bunch of other technical subsidiary brands other than GAN. The internet gaming system was relevant and applicable in the United States because there were all these land-based casinos who wanted to move online but didn't know what to move online with and how to address this market, and how to address the market safely without triggering any regulatory landmines. You know, if they didn't want it to blow up in their face with a regulator. So this is where we came together with Aristocrat and we started launching these free play websites. And the very first free play website that we launched for Aristocrat, for delivery by Aristocrat to one of their corporate customers, was actually Maryland Live. And that launched in April of 2012, 3 months before Maryland Live opened the doors, and it was enormously successful. And Maryland Live has been very, very public in making their statements. It's a very successful experience for them, and it, crucially, for new casino property opening, it avoided huge queues at the player services desk to sign up on a rewards card. So there was a huge number of people who walked in the door within the first few days, showed their ID, collected their rewards card, no problem at all. However, when we looked under the bonnet of the gaming activity that was going on, blood started coming from our ears. The sheer demand for playing casino games online amongst American casino patrons was extraordinarily high, higher than anything we'd ever seen in our history in Europe. And we'd had some great successful businesses in Europe, specifically the Italian skill games market, where we saw people were playing maybe 4 to 5 times a month. They would play a skill game for real money, because it's the game like a parlor game, a game that would probably be closest facsimile to a gin rummy or a backgammon here in America, but over in Italy they were Italian card games. But the players were incredibly committed. They would play 4 or 5 times a month, whereas here in the US we saw that the average slot player was engaged 6 to 10 times a month, and we thought, holy cow, that's extraordinary. There's a significant level of demand for American casino patrons to play what we would call an industrial strength online casino proposition, even for free.
right,
just for the entertainment value of sitting at home and spending their time on their own personal device at home, mm-hmm, almost in preparation for going to the casino. And that was our hypothesis back in 2012, that all this activity was an indicator of what we like to call the canary in the demand coal mine,
right?
That's what told us that there was huge demand here in the United States, and it wasn't being served, because if you look at that time frame, 2012, 2013, UEGA had already happened, and the financial sanctions and the criminal sanctions on anybody who was continuing to offer real money gaming websites into the United States were so great, they effectively internalized the market.
Right.
In other words, the market was not being served at all from the implementation of UEGA, because all the bad guys running real money offshore casino websites pulled the plug and ran away for fear of being extremely rendered next time they went on holiday to the Caribbean or visited Mexico or anywhere else that was remotely proximate to the United States. Mm-hmm. And that was a rational fear. So the United States was, and I argue still is today, a market that is not being served by the people who are best positioned to serve that demand, and those are the land-based casinos.
Right.
And we see land-based casinos in America as completely different to anything we see in Europe. In Europe, they tend to be small, sweaty, smoke-filled boxes, maybe with 50 slot machines.
Right.
Over here, they are vast entertainment complexes with gaming at the center, but you've got amenities, a range of amenities, and a range of experiences which are simply unavailable or unfamiliar to anybody from Europe or other parts of the world. So American casinos are very much at the heart of every regional community, and they function as much as a social hub, a community center for people, as a provider or access to gaming facilities. And I think that was one of our key insights back in 2012 when we started to consider the what ifs, or how do we best serve this marketplace. And we'd also seen the emergence of social gaming on Facebook. We'd also kind of in a real way considered Facebook to be a difficult platform to justify building a business on, because you had customer ownership issues in that the customer data is inherently owned by Facebook and inherently made available to third-party advertisers. So if I wanted to advertise in your social casino, not a problem, I could do that. So we kind of figured out ultimately it would be a race to the bottom, that the cost of acquisition and retention of a player on Facebook would just inexorably rise, and that's been proven out. I think that the passage of time, it's been much longer to see this, because it's slowed down by the general expansion of activity on Facebook's platform, but it is still, you know, that investment thesis still holds water. So we focused on identifying the need, and the need was U.S. casinos want to move online, and then we identified what's the appropriate model. Stage one for us was free-to-play, which proved to be enormously successful. Stage two was what we have defined and branded as simulated gaming. And we launched it first in January of last year. We've now launched it four times in the United States, all for major casinos. These aren't mom-and-pop casinos. Right. These are major casinos with an average of $500 to $600 million a year.
Right.
And talking to you today, I'm 3 days away from launching Maryland Live for simulated gaming as an upgrade from their free-to-play gaming proposition that we first launched for them, 3 years ago.
Well, let's talk about the Maryland Live experience. I think what really surprised people so much was that, yes, they came on the site to play, but the fact that you convert them into players that actually came to your casino was kind of a revelation for people that people are going to enjoy it, maybe we can get some loyalty out of them, but the fact that you could actually bring them to your casino by having them play and enjoy what they have online, and of course marketing to them in an effective manner. So how did that kind of change the game as you see it?
So again, part of our experience in the early days, we realized that casino patrons had an enormously strong relationship with this strange credit card in their wallet, except it wasn't a credit card, it was a rewards card. And I'm told there are something like 50 million unique reward cards out there in the marketplace, and it seems to be true that about 50% of all casino patrons have a rewards card. Some casinos do a great loyalty program and have up to 80% carded play, and others have as low as 25-30% carded play, but the average seems to be about 50%. So American casino patrons place serious value on their rewards card and the rewards points, which are stored within their rewards account held within the casino management system. So we have progressively, and it's taken many, many years to do this, we have integrated now with Aristocrat's casino management system, Bally's casino management system, down in New Jersey for Real Money Gaming, mm-hmm. and also various different versions of Bally that have been deemed propriety, like Foxwoods proprietary CMS, which is at its heart a Bally system.
Right.
Also, more recently, IGT's casino management system, and other data warehouses which sit on top of typically the Bally casino management system that are out there. Right. So we're the only company still to date that has done all of these integrations with all of these casino management systems that together represent the bulk of the casino management systems used by land-based casinos here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And we've done that for a simple purpose, and that's to deliver convergence to the online experience so that you can play online or undertake an activity online and receive reward points credited instantly mm-hmm. to your rewards account. And that process, that framework that we branded iBridge, mm-hmm. the iBridge framework for the transmission of value triggered by online gaming activity or online gaming associated activity, mm-hmm. has been patented by us. And we received that patent in September of 2014.
Okay. Great.
So we're the only company. So we've got some IP in the mm-hmm. space, some intellectual property in the space.
Right.
We believe it's key IP, and it's one of the reasons that we remain at the forefront of this industry, because ultimately we are still, you know, we're not yet a household name in the industry, but we're working hard to prove the business case. And I genuinely believe that in 2016 we will see one of our U.S. casino clients leap into the online space in a way that will surprise a lot of interested industry actors who are simply sitting, waiting, and watching mm-hmm. to decide what to do, how to do it, and who to do it with.
Okay. So tell us the connection that you make with the customers, you know, who do the play for free or the simulated gaming from home, and then visit the casino. Is there a correlation there in terms of you know, how many percent of those players you can expect to visit your casino?
So right now, we believe well in excess of 50% of all casino patrons in America are already playing social casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And if a casino executive hears that statistic, and it's a new statistic to them, they should be a bit irritated by that.
Yeah.
Because their casino patrons are going home or engaging playing slots on their mobile phone mm-hmm. or on their desktop or their laptop or their work PC.
Right.
They're playing with somebody else.
Right.
So the land-based casino treasures the relationship that they have mm-hmm. with the casino patron, but the moment they step off property, they lose that relationship.
Right.
And other people have stepped in to fill that void. And those other people are principally the vendors, the manufacturers
right.
who have acquired social casinos or built social mm-hmm. casinos. And that point is not lost on a growing cohort of casino executives
mm-hmm.
in America, and I think they're beginning to understand the scale of the business
right.
and the sheer quantum of money that's being spent by casino patrons when they're off property.
Mm-hmm.
So if you appreciate the level of engagement, what you need to then reach is a conclusion on how do I reassert my relationship? If I've lost more than half of my casino patrons already, how do I reassert my relationship mm-hmm. with that group
right.
and then also protect the remainder who haven't yet decided to download IGT's Double Down
right.
or Aristocrat's Hearts of Vegas
mm-hmm.
or one of the other social casinos that they don't necessarily talk about? And I was very interested to walk around G2E this year, and on IGT's booth, Aristocrat's booth, I didn't see a corner dedicated to their own B2C social casino.
Right.
What I was interested in to see is, are you going to showcase your own B2C social casino?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't seem to be a priority for them in demonstrating their wares. All of their wares were there, except for this enormously profitable, mm-hmm. lucrative
sure.
engine of growth in their business, their B2C social casino. Didn't seem to be any meaningful representation.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why, Roger.
In the case of IGT, it's what is it, 20% of their revenue now? So the fact that they say that they can let the casino use that as their own little social casino, but they don't rebrand it. You know, it's still Double Down.
Roger, I'm unaware of that, but that mm-hmm. wouldn't necessarily surprise me. I think the major manufacturers are aware of this tension
yeah.
they're creating. Unfortunately, they are addicted to the revenues, the growth, and the
right.
opportunity there. So it's very, very hard
mm-hmm.
for companies that are focused on short-term goals, short-term
right.
financial targets, to ignore that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So once a casino has woken up to the reality that the majority of their casino patrons are engaged online with their vendors,
mm-hmm.
then they have to make some very real decisions. And what we see, all supported by now coming on 2 years' worth of data, so we have extraordinary evidence of the behavior, we're now seeing two things. Firstly, that when a casino deploys simulated gaming, the player at home or the patron who is off property engaging in simulated gaming, it's their way of preparing to come back to the casino.
Right.
Because they're playing and active online with their local casino because they want to go and visit that local casino.
Sure.
So there's a preparation cycle. That doesn't mean that they're not continuing to engage and frequent other competing social casinos. Mm-hmm. They still have social casinos on their mobile phone. They'll still play with IGT's Double Down, Aristocrats Hearts of Vegas, and Scientific Games' social casino, Jackpot Party, and I think they just launched another one called Goldfish Casino. Mm-hmm. So they will continue to engage, but we modify that behavior. So we modify it by reducing the amount of money they will spend with other social casinos and redistributing their existing spend, which is typically fragmented across two or three social casinos.
Right.
And just so you appreciate the promiscuous nature of an online casino patron who isn't engaged with their land-based casino because their local land-based casino doesn't offer them an online solution or a proper professional online solution, they will engage with about 10 social casinos in any given monthly period. But look under the bonnet of that statistic, and they will only spend money with two or three of them.
Right.
So they'll play with 10, spend with three.
Right.
We now know that as we launch simulated gaming and extend the on-property value proposition of reward points, extend that into the online domain at home for the patron, they modify the behavior by shifting their existing spend amongst those three social casinos in favor, substantially, in favor of the land-based casino. Mm-hmm. And that's evidence in the numbers because we generate well in excess of $200 per spending patron per month. And that's way in excess of the typical values reported by social casinos. A typical social casino will say, yeah, 2% of our players spend money every month, and that 2% cohort will spend $25, $50, $75 bucks, there or thereabouts.
Right.
And I think Macquarie Research came out with a great average, and their average was around about $80 in spend.
Right.
And there's a big range of spend. Mm-hmm. So the casino patron, the amount of money they're spending is fragmented across two or three.
Right.
We're now generating in excess of $200 consistently from patrons, which means they must be modifying their behavior.
Right.
They're spending less with the other social casinos and more with their local land-based casino, which explains our regional strategy of look at all the gaming hubs in America and try and tie up with, you know, the largest or second largest brands in all of those regional gaming hubs.
Right, right.
And you've seen that roll out throughout the course of 2014 and 2015.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you know, when the player leaves the property, you lose touch with him. But by having a social casino branded for your casino, you can touch your player 24 hours a day.
That's right, but it has to be your own.
Yeah,
it can't exactly.
That's what I'm talking
about. Can't be a cookie cutter experience. It can't be an identikit product.
Right.
Oh, look, it's another website. Oh, I've been to that website before. I've seen that. I've seen that. So the presentation layer has to be a custom product that fits elegantly within your existing website proposition, because every major casino has a website.
Sure,
and what do you do on that website? You directions to the casino. Mm-hmm. Maybe the more sophisticated ones have the ability for their patrons to log in and check their reward points. And those are the most sophisticated. Not many, though, right? And that's the only context that online is highly relevant, that you can check your reward points, and that's a valuable service.
Right.
So then you add an online casino, it's simulated gaming online casino, to your existing web proposition that fits elegantly, hand in glove, so that the player is always incentivized to access the online casino. They go back to the existing website.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get usage levels which spike and become something very, very different.
Right.
That's where you're getting players frequenting your website, logging into your website, the online casino, part of your website, several times a day, through mobile apps, through desktop websites, through a responsive design mobile formatted website that reformats dynamically for your mobile phone or your tablet PC. So
you just mentioned, you know,
you do need to stop me, by the way, otherwise I'll just keep on talking until you say stop, right?
Well, I'm trying to focus.
So free to interrupt.
So you just mentioned, you know, everything that you do for your clients is basically custom built. But give me a generality of how this works. And this is the GameStack program, right, that you use for that?
The GameStack is the internet gaming system which enables all this cool stuff to happen.
Okay. So walk me through the process when you go to a potential client. you know, what you tell them you can do, and then once they sign up with you, how this rolls out.
Yep. So a client, like ASAP, for example, we sign a contract, and then within a defined period of time, which we agree all becomes part of the contract debate, we will launch for them a website designed in a collaborative manner where we say, hey, we think this might be a really interesting, unique way of presenting the online casino proposition to your patrons. And so they're agreed or disagreed, and then we peace breaks out, and we have an agreed design, and then we start building the design, and then we launch. And when we launch a desktop website, we launch a mobile formatted website, and actually they're one and the same, because there's something called a responsive design website. So depending on what size the screen is of the device you're using to look at the website, it dynamically reformats to present the content in a correct manner. And then players can sign up, and they can sign up either by using their rewards card or they can simply tap in a little bit of information about themselves or a complete set of information about themselves, depending on what the casino operator wants to do. Mm-hmm. And this very much sits with the casino executive group to make a decision about what kind of online casino do you want. Mm-hmm. If you want a simulated gaming proposition that is principally and almost exclusively designed for your casino patrons, your casino patrons who have rewards cards, then we're going to design something that is very specific to them. Mm-hmm. If you want something that's more like a social casino proposition, which has a much more mass market appeal, so it will appeal to your core patron group, but will also appeal to the broad, the massive. Do you know how many Americans are playing slots on Facebook every day?
No.
10 million.
Really?
There are 10 million. That's your addressable market. 10 million Americans playing slots on Facebook every single day. So if you want a product proposition for them, you have to acknowledge that your brand is probably regional in nature. Mm-hmm. So you probably have a brand that makes sense for people who live within 2, 3, 4 hour drive distance. But when it comes to the mass market social casino opportunity, you need to take a very different approach towards the design and delivery of your product experience. So we identify upfront very, very early, you know, what is your ambition? Is your ambition to take baby steps, and your first baby step is to design a product which is highly relevant to your existing customers? Or do you want a product that is more weighted towards the mass market who are not your customers, because you have an objective of growing outside of your database?
Right.
Well, that's okay, so we can deliver that too. And then we launch that product, and then you have to make a decision about how you're going to market that product. And one of the key ways that we distinguish ourselves in the market is that we have, and this is where we tip our hat towards Playtech, and one of the reasons that Playtech was very successful in the European and international market was by offering marketing services support in addition to the core technology. So we have a very sophisticated marketing services support offering, which says, look, we know you guys don't necessarily have a bunch of super expensive digital marketing experts, but we do. So it's quite a contentious subject sometimes, who does the marketing, but it's very easy for a land-based casino marketing team to send an email to their customers, right? That's not that difficult. Or put posters up on property and a bunch of other things. And that's cool, and that will deliver a certain amount of value for the simulated gaming proposition. But if you want to expand outside of that, if you want to go into the whole 10 million Americans playing every day market, then you need a very, very different set of skills. And that's what we have. We built, it's taken us a couple of years to build that discipline, that specialty inside our London team. And that is available to casinos who want to rent the clever folks for a period of time, and then over time learn how to do it themselves and build their own functionality inside their own organization. And that's the evolutionary path which we expect. We expect people to take our technology and our marketing support. They might not take marketing support to begin with. They might have a good old college try on their own for a while and then go, well, actually, we do need some support, so can you guys help? And obviously, we stand ready to do that. And then over time, once they've learned a little bit more about how this all works and bolts together, go out there. Once the income justifies it, go and build your own team. Go and hire some clever folks from San Francisco and bribe them to move to the desert and build your own functioning team and do it yourself. Because these land-based casino organizations are so big, it is almost impossible to believe that by the time we hit 2020, they're not going to be doing this substantially themselves internally within their own organizations. And I think what we are trying to do with GAN, with simulated gaming, for major regional casinos in America is quite disruptive. Potentially disruptive to the social casino market, but that's yet to be proven. but very, very much so disruptive to the existing ecosystem of relationships between systems providers to casinos,
right.
box machine leased or buy providers to casinos, and then in comes GAN with a mandate to effectively be your casino management system for iGaming.
Okay.
And the fact that we've now spent, so it's like running a marathon, Roger, and this is one of the key things that I keep on saying to my team internally. We're running a marathon, and the good news is we started running the marathon years ago.
Right.
And we're kind of, you know, mission is definitely not accomplished, right. but we are so far down right. the track of this marathon that we have very, very clear, deep blue water between us and anybody else who's identifying and chasing after this this opportunity. And I think over time, as more and larger U.S. casino groups adopt the GAN solution, because of the amount of intellectual energy we've invested in thinking about how to solve this problem for casinos, I think we will ultimately become a deep part of the existing infrastructure in the industry.
So when you have a client, is there an app that goes along with this, or do you have to just go to their website?
Yes, sir. You get everything. You get all the cool stuff, yeah. right? All the cool stuff that is kind of business as usual in Europe is deployed as standard. So you get your desktop website, you get a bunch of games on that. You get your mobile website, you get a bunch of what are called HTML5 games embedded in that. So you've got some stuff that you can, you know, don't need to download an app, but you're going to have a bit of a play around. And then you've also got a very high quality native mobile application for Apple and Android, and we're just about to launch it for Amazon as well, which is kind of cool, which is designed for devised for the players who are already engaged in social casinos. So if you look at the average social casino player, they don't play on a website. They've actually downloaded an app onto their phone. So they're used to a very different experience and in many ways a much higher quality audio-visual experience than is arguably capable of being delivered just by a mobile-formatted website with mobile-specific HTML5 games. HTML5 is still a client application framework that's got some very, very fundamental issues. And if you look at the average HTML5 game and hold it up next to a native application for social casino or the GAN simulated gaming product, you'll see the difference is very, very apparent. It's very apparent to the consumer as well. So we deliver them all, and we let the consumer choose which modality they want to engage in. And you see, again, a bit church and state. You've got the core casino patron group who love the desktop proposition and will dabble with the mobile proposition. But then you get the wider market, the social casino market, who will seriously engage with the mobile native application and then dabble with the desktop proposition.
Okay.
So there's, you know, there's no such thing as a standard rule for anybody.
Yeah.
And the complexity of the behavior interactions is huge.
It goes back to the custom-built things, I imagine. And, you know, what do you pick and choose from what your clients want?
Yeah, exactly. And then in the background, so we come to the table with lots of great ideas, and the clients decide, you know, they will typically table some ideas, and some of them will be down the unicorn end of the spectrum.
Right.
That's a myth. That's a fantasy. It's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, the bulk of them are in the sensible, very clever, intelligent convergence. If we do this online, it will make sense on property for me to market to my casino patrons. So we try and deeply collaborate with the casino operators and the casino executive, because they know their customers way better than we do.
Right.
They know their own casino property and all the different inherent advantages. Mm-hmm. So for ASAP, for Stratosphere, they got a wide range of opportunities and experiences to offer to somebody who wants to play online. And that's crucial to understand. You know, social casinos today, with very few exceptions, I mean, there are exceptions to prove the rule, but the rule is they offer you the games. That's it. You've got the slot game, the base game, and then you've got a meta game, which is usually a bit of a journey. You know, what level am I, and a bunch of other things.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And then you can spend some money. But the bulk of people will just circulate and pick up their free coins, and it's a bit of a race to the bottom, because over time, you know, social casino over there is now offering me 1 billion virtual credits and a 2x sale and a whole bunch of other things. So it's a race to the bottom. Whereas land-based casinos, one of the very interesting under the bonnet economic aspects of the activity is that they don't have that race to the bottom. You know, people and casino patrons and people who frequent casinos who aren't patrons with rewards cards are conditioned to spend more in association with a genuine casino brand. And you actually see that in the publicly reported numbers of Caesars Interactive. You can see their Caesars product, which they also they brand with the Caesars brand, you can see that the spend per player per month is way above. Do you remember that $80 average spend that I mentioned from Quarry Research? Well, they're up to 140.
Yeah.
We're up at 200, well north of 200, but they're at 140, so they way outperform. And one of the reasons for that is because of the casino brand. So I think there's still huge opportunity for U.S. casinos to get involved in this market, and they can choose, well, just do a easy tick-the-box exercise, take something from an existing vendor, not a problem. But if they really want to get involved and they really want to have ambition to be significant in this marketplace, then they need a complex industrial-strength technology solution provider with add-on services like GAN.
Okay. Now, you mentioned early on in your company you did a lot of content, but you know, looking through your website yesterday, I noticed that you do business with a wide variety of content providers. Are you preferring that now to actually bring content in, or do you still develop GAN content?
So we do develop GAN content, but we don't like to develop slot content because we a long time ago, 6 years ago, 2009, we looked at the market and we decided, okay, well, we pretty much cracked table games and we pretty much cracked multiplayer skill games, which are deeply complex, but they're generic games.
Right.
In that they're complex to build and maintain and operate, but they're what I call fire and forget games. So they're games that you develop once and then you upgrade them every couple of years with a new lick of paint, but that's pretty much it. Slot games really do require the extraordinary institutional strength and internal knowledge of major casino equipment manufacturers. So one of the every so often we come up with a stroke of genius, and this was, I believe, in hindsight, a stroke of genius. We decided not to try and do slots and hope for the best. We decided to partner with the best and build and assemble an extraordinary portfolio of recognized, super high-quality casino slots from many Tier 1 manufacturers. So we have developed the online versions of a lot of Aristocrat's iconic titles, Konami's iconic titles, Ainsworth, incredible technologies, multimedia games. And as a general rule, and this is the one thing that I think people in Europe don't necessarily appreciate, these games perform way above the average as compared to a European slot. You know, Europe is dominated by cheap content. There's a lot of cheap, low-quality content in the online space because the online companies didn't need to work very hard to make money. It was very simple. Just here's a base game, here's a feature, and just clone it with here's a mermaid game, and here's a fluffy cat game, and here's your Queen of Egypt game, and jobs are good. And actually, if you look at the European market, trademark patent infringement has been disgusting, absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, no question.
Whereas in the U.S., there are very clear rules of engagement. So I think partnering with land-based manufacturers has been a big part of our strategic strength, and that takes years to do, right?
Right.
It takes a very, very long time to build up a competitive, credible portfolio, and we're just we've been bringing to market very successfully for these guys very, very high-quality renditions of their machine-based games, and the quality aspect is super, super important. You know, these manufacturers, these are their babies. They don't want you to implement an ugly baby, which is why we focus on Flash for desktop and laptops and native applications. HTML5 is a good framework, but I still, and my company still believes HTML5 is an immature framework which doesn't deliver high enough quality renditions of a machine-based game, and that they're not high enough quality for the manufacturer, and they're definitely not high enough quality for the consumer.
Yeah.
The consumer always go, why am I playing this slightly shoddy, slightly clunky version of a machine-based game that I know and love and have played for years?
Right.
And they, as a result, they prefer the Flash and they prefer the native download application, which is what we focus on.
Okay. So, you know, we've had the implementation of iGaming in three states in the U.S.
In 1 year. How about that? 2013 turned out to be lucky for three.
Right.
But and 2014 and 2015, it's been the slow sucking sound of a vacuum. So it looks like Pennsylvania will go sometime soon-ish. I mean, it's crystal ball gazing, and I hate to engage in it. But if Pennsylvania goes, that's going to be great news for the market.
Right.
But you've got lots of what I call gray swans flapping out there in the distance. They're not black, they're not white, they're gray, which means they're not totally unexpected.
Right.
You've got Rawa, which is out there. You've got a bunch of other issues. You've got the generally slow political process, you know, best espoused in Pennsylvania, really.
Right.
But if Pennsylvania goes, I think there will be, to a degree, confidence returned to the concept that a regulatory cycle will continue.
Right.
And I think that's crucial. If you look at the share prices of companies, including my own, that have been very heavily exposed to the regulatory cycle, you can see the damage that's been done by the sudden slowdown in the pace of regulation.
Right.
You know, they haven't fallen like dominoes. In fact, it looked like there were only three dominoes,
right.
and they all fell in the first year.
Right.
But I do believe that logic will prevail, and you will see regulation in Pennsylvania. Does it happen this side of 2016? Does it happen in 2016? I don't know.
Right.
And lots of people have got great opinions. I'm not going to repackage them and deliver them here. I'm simply going to say, if Pennsylvania goes, then I think we can all credibly begin to restore a modicum of confidence that regulation will continue to unfold, albeit in fits and starts.
Right. But they could be the next domino in the Northeast there. We've heard talk from Maryland, from New York, from Massachusetts, that they consider it, or at least they're looking into it. So,
well, you drop a rock into a pond, and you get ripples. Mm-hmm. And the rock was really dropped, not in Las Vegas and Delaware, but in New Jersey.
Right.
And at least now everybody can do a back-of-the-envelope calculation on how much is it going to be worth.
Right.
And I think Pennsylvania's come up with some unique ideas towards $10 million license fees payable within 30 days and passage legislation if you want to be involved, stuff like that, which means it's not just jammed tomorrow, but it's jammed today for the individual state. So Pennsylvania, the more I see the different approaches taken, there's a consistent, unifying theme, which is protectionism in favor of land-based casinos who have who employ a huge number of people.
Sure.
Online gaming doesn't generally create a lot of jobs.
Right.
It really doesn't.
Right.
Not as compared to a land-based bricks-and-mortar facility.
Sure.
So I get why, and I actually support that level of protectionism. But the land-based casino operators in America, and I've been consistent on day one since our American adventure started back in 2010, 2011, I'm a firm believer that they are the inheritors of the online space here in America, and they should be. And simulated gaming was purpose-built to permit land-based casinos to move online well ahead of regulation.
Right.
So you already have a thriving online community nationwide and international. You know, don't think this is is medicine sans frontières.
Yeah.
You know, it's jeu en ligne sans frontières. You know, it's the same difference.
Right.
People around the world can play, but you will have a core group who will be playing within your local state. And as a result, you are hugely well prepared. But what really surprised us as we turned on into 2014, post our initial public offering on the London Stock Exchange, we were hugely surprised at the financial potential for simulated gaming. You know, we had gone to market saying, guys, we think the regulatory cycle is going to unfold, and if it happens quickly, this is awesome for everybody and hugely awesome for us to get involved. That's great. We had a very successful initial public offering in nearly exactly 2 years ago. But we have this other thing we're baking in the oven, which is if regulation doesn't happen, this thing that we've devised called simulated gaming, we think there's great legs on that, but we don't know what they are yet because we haven't launched it.
Mm-hmm.
So we launched it 2 months later, and now we've launched it four times in a row for very similar-ish scale properties.
Mm-hmm.
And we now are firm believers that simulated gaming is a very real business opportunity, which isn't discrete and separate from regulated gaming, from real money gaming. It actually interweaves. And a simple single statistic, one of our casino operator customers, 7% of their players for simulated gaming are resident in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And that always blows my mind. It's like, hang on a sec, these are people who can do real money, and yet they're playing for simulated gaming. So the players, there's a Venn diagram of people who play social simulated that overlaps with regulated real money gaming, particularly over in the slot player demographic of real money gaming. And they will bounce backwards and forwards between the modalities of play, and they won't think twice about it.
Right.
Which is why I continue to espouse for land-based casinos who do real money gaming.
Mm-hmm.
You do real money gaming in Jersey, great. You should also do simulated gaming.
Right.
Which sometimes I'm burned to the stake as a heretic.
Right.
But I do keep on pointing out that, guys, there is X amount of value in regulated real money gaming, but there's Y amount of incremental value if you do simulated gaming in addition to that. And that's where, you know, GAN has, again, run the marathon on behalf of these guys, and it's one of the unique selling points of our company today.
All right, so let's say you've got simulated gaming client in Pennsylvania, for example, and they go to real money gaming. How do you transition them to real money gaming? Are you the company they're going to work with?
We flick the switch. My chief operating officer would kill me for saying we flick the switch, but in the case of Parx Casino, we genuinely do flick the switch because we've already done the hard work of building the infrastructure on property. Right. So there's a significant hardware platform that was installed on property at the beginning of this year, very much because of the Pennsylvania regulatory cycle looking like it will happen. And it will happen at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because, it's going to happen within 6 months. It's going to happen at some point. So they decided quite correctly to make the investment to start from day one with a firm foundation. The hardware platform is on property, the internet gaming activity. They walk past their CMS, casino management system, say, that's where my casino patrons are active. And they walk two steps later right past their internet gaming system and say, well, that's where my online players are active as well. And, oh, look, there's an umbilical cord attaching the two together. So there you go. So in Pennsylvania, our client Parx Casino is ready to go. And whether, you know, there's a licensing process, there's a certification process, but because it's exactly the same technology that's up and running and certified in New Jersey for real money, there's a huge amount of this huge benefit towards Parx adopting a regulated real money gaming system and launching simulated gaming, which borrows some of the best ideas from social and implements them inside a regulated real money gaming technology platform. So if you look at social casinos, social casinos, as a general rule, and maybe there are exceptions, I'm not aware of any exceptions, but as a general rule, social casinos are video games built on top of Facebook. They're video games. They're not internet gaming systems. Again, returning to the iceberg concept, the game is the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg is what Facebook does for social casinos. So we're the only real money gaming system out there that has comprehensively injected social casino-esque features into the technology framework. So if you want an achievement system or a leveling up system, you can have that. In fact, I think next week we launch it for Empire City, all the leveling up systems, the achievement systems, and all those kind of things that would be familiar to a social casino player are being launched by Empire City. Why? Because they wanted them. Because they said, this is cool, simulated gaming is great. We're going to launch with the vanilla product, and then later we're going to take, they took slot tournaments. They were the pioneers to take our slot, real-time slot tournaments, which are very, very popular. And now they're going to be pioneers taking our social features, the leveling up systems, the achievement systems, where, fantastic, you get a shield or a badge or whatever it is for playing all the games on the website. I'm giving you a trivial illustrative example, but that's an example. And that's moreover on the metagame. The metagame concept of this kind of overarching journey of you, the player, you're investing in becoming a level 300 plus two sort of charisma wielding social casino player. And that's the capability that we have built and delivered for our clients in addition to the regulated real money gaming system and simulated gaming. So there's this broad spectrum where at one end you've got regulated real money gaming and the other end you've got video game style social casino gaming. In the middle ground is simulated gaming. So we have the benefits of being on a regulated real money gaming system where all the back office systems are highly, highly comprehensive back office system designed to give you, the operator, a single view on your casino patron. Last time you visited a casino property, what his theoretical yield was. Oh, and look, the incremental extra value that they've generated online and bringing those two worlds together. Not in a spectacular collision, but within a framework where you can tap in and you can dial in an app as you wish and determine exactly what's going on with your single customer the moment they step off property. Lots of information there, Roger.
I'm buried in information here. So, you know, we could talk all day, but I know you've got things to do. So I really have one more question. Where do you see GAN in a few more years? You just see a bigger version of what you have now, or are there other things that you want to enter into, you know, after you grow your current clients?
That's a really interesting question, and we've got a healthy debate going on at the moment. I think we want the right clients. We don't want all the clients, right? I think that's an important distinction. I mean, there are a lot of casinos here in the United States who will simply see online as a tick box exercise. And those aren't necessarily the clients that we want. You know, we want clients who recognize the skill set we bring to the table and the technology platform, the sophistication of what we bring to the table, And I don't necessarily want to kind of deliver a Ferrari only for it to be used to go and collect the groceries every other weekend.
Right.
We want large
clients who are engaged.
Clients who are engaged and willing to invest mm-hmm. in people internally mm-hmm. who can take them on that journey. Mm-hmm. You know, we can only deliver the technical tools and the intellectual knowledge services, but we want the casinos to employ somebody smart who's their employee, who's going to build a team for customer service support, who's going to build a marketing team in-house over time and go on that journey. And that's a 3 to 5 year journey for mm-hmm. all of these guys. And in the meantime, we get busy now. And I keep on saying to people, just as an idea, if I came to you 25 years ago and mm-hmm. said, hey, do you want to be the 7th casino in America,
yeah.
what would your reaction be? The reaction would be, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I'm now coming to you and say, do you want to be the 7th casino to be online in America? Mm-hmm. And the reaction should be, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And more and more, we're seeing people wake up to the opportunity. You've got a combination of found money. In other words, yes. you have existing assets, you've got existing patrons, bring them online and you'll make XYZ amount of money every mm-hmm. year. Great. Well done. It's all incremental, very high margin right. income. But then there's this bigger opportunity. And that bigger opportunity is the undiscovered country for mm-hmm. most of these land-based casino operators. And at the moment, the general lack of unwilling to engage in online has been the reason why other actors have emerged. Mm-hmm. You know, independent companies have sprung up. College boys who put a slot machine game on Facebook and it's wildly successful. Casino equipment manufacturers who mm-hmm. decide they're going to get into the game, particularly as IGT made the first leap and took all the arrows in the back from the traditional right. land-based casino customers. So mm-hmm. once IGT did it, then it's okay for everybody else to do it.
Right.
And I think it's very interesting to see that there's an emergence of, there's effectively two camps amongst casino manufacturers. You've got casino manufacturers who have very substantial social casino operators and, mm-hmm. and they don't talk very much about it, frankly, outside right. of the investment community, and hence my anecdote about I didn't see a Double Down corner or a Hearts right. Vegas corner on their respective owner stands mm-hmm. at G2E. But you've also got on the other side of the equation, you've got casino equipment manufacturers who go, you know what, we don't want to be online. We want our content to be transmitted mm-hmm. online to our land-based casino customers
right.
in order to augment and support that relationship. And that does genuinely work. That's been proven by us here in America, that if you put your games on board our platform, you will have more orders from the land-based casino who adopts our platform,
right.
our simulated gaming proposition.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we, as a point in time, that's where we are in the industry right now.
Right. All right. Well, Dermot, thanks for sitting down with us. Again, a lot of information that I'm going to have to absorb over the next months, but we'd certainly like to stay in touch. And you know, your company's grown very quickly, being recognized by the industry, I think, as probably the leading company in this space. So we're glad to be able to talk to you.
Well, we're nearly there. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on the GGB Podcast. If you want to read more about this issue or any issue in the gaming industry, read our magazine, GGB Magazine, or visit ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the gaming industry, subscribe to GGB News. For more information, visit ggbnews.com. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.